Cybersecurity remains one of the biggest hurdles to widespread use of cloud computing across the government, but a new type of data encryption might be the answer to those who still question if their data can be safe in the cloud. Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, joins me with details on what some federal chief information officers see as the key to security in the cloud. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so FedRAMP is supposed to be the key to security in the cloud, or at least certifies cloud providers. Is it good enough, or do we need something past that?
Well, I think that there's something maybe a little past that. I think what's going on here is FedRAMP is all well and good. I don't think anyone is doubting the necessity of it, the benefits it brings. But I'm not sure if the standards necessarily protect the data, at least in the way the CIOs, at least some CIOs, say that they need to. And I think that's still a real sticking point for a lot of people in the security world. Now, the networks are protected, yes, but what about the cloud providers and the people who work for them? In many ways, what we're talking about here, Tom, is the insider threat, and there's been, you know, the huge focus on the insider threat ever since Edward Snowden. Now, that has to include both vendor employees and, of course, federal employees, and I think that's where this is coming from. Joe Paiva is the CIO of the International Trade Administration. He says a new cloud encryption model could be the missing link that secures the cloud.
One of the hot new market segments supporting cloud right now in IT is this idea of a cloud encryption gateway. Essentially what happens is whenever one of your people go out to your cloud, because in each of your cloud service providers you have your own kind of URL, when your people hit that URL, they're actually redirected through a cloud encryption gateway provider. And what happens is all the data that you actually sit with that SaaS or that PaaS provider is actually encrypted using encryption keys from the encryption gateway. We have the option of maintaining the keys ourselves, so we have the private key. So what it means is the encryption gateway provider and or Microsoft or whoever we use, none of them can get to our stuff. We're the only ones who can decrypt it. But the other really cool thing about it is instead of the salami slice, go ahead and encrypt everything with this encryption and kill your performance and all that, the better of the bunch of these encryption gateways allows you to sit with the business, look at your data elements and say, which ones are important and what type of encryption should I put on each element? So you can actually tailor the encryption to allow faster searches or to allow faster data input, to put a little extra security on the things that are really important and a little less security on the things that are already public knowledge.
Are you guys looking at this? Is this something you're already using? Where's the status for ITA?
So I have to be careful. I would say right now we're officially in the market research stage with a very aggressive acquisition schedule.
How exciting is this type of technology, generally speaking, for you? Does it really satisfy some of your concerns or satisfy some of the broader concerns about cloud security?
I'm not allowed to invest in IT companies, but if I were, I'd be investing in cloud encryption gateways. I think it's the absolute key, because then you don't have to trust your cloud provider. And why would you, right? There's no guarantees in life. So I think a good cloud encryption gateway just kind of opens the door for cloud. I mean, really takes the limiter off.
Now, I caught up with Paiva after he spoke Thursday at the Microsoft Federal Executive Forum in Washington. Paiva says, you know, his take on this cloud encryption is actually shared by other CIOs as well. I also caught up with Rick Holgate. He's the CIO at the Justice Department's Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosive Bureau. He says there are positives and negatives with this idea of cloud encryption.
It's predicated on the encryption with the customer controlling the keys to encryption, which basically makes the data meaningless to the cloud service provider. And that has pluses and minuses. When it's meaningless to the provider, they can't read our data, they can't understand what's in our data, they have no visibility in our data, which means that they also can't use the elements of our data to make the service more meaningful or to deliver more meaningful service. And so that's been a potential compromising aspect of encrypting Microsoft content in Exchange and SharePoint and other things, because then they can't deliver the same experience when all they're dealing with is encrypted information. Now, Box has adapted their model where they can tolerate encrypted information in their environment and still deliver essentially the same experience whether they know what the data is or not. And closing those gaps of being able to replicate a similar user experience with encrypted data without sacrificing a user experience and satisfying our security requirements, that's the next layer of solution we need to come to.
Now, you heard Rick Holgate talk about Box. That's the data file sharing company that does it in the cloud. That's a, if you go online, Tom, I would encourage our listeners to go online and find more information about Box. It's a very interesting thing they're doing with data encryption. But as you can see just from Paiva and Holgate, they really do think that it's, well, it's maybe not quite there yet. It's getting there, and it's something more companies and agencies are looking at.
Yes, I've been to that website. I was just wondering how they were able at this late date in the game to get the web URL. Box.com. That would have gone 20 years ago. All right, so beyond data, what are the other concerns that about cloud security that CIOs have? What else are you hearing, Jason?
Well, I think the data encryption piece, while it's huge, at the same time, there's the people issue. Again, we'll go back to the insider threat that I mentioned earlier. I think that is always going to be a continued concern. Again, I caught up with Holgate to ask more about how ATF dealt with the personnel security clearance challenge when his agency moved to the cloud for email and for collaboration.
And the way we dealt with it was to address our concerns from a personnel security perspective of who had access to our data in an unencrypted form in a way that we were comfortable with. And so for us, that involves trust of the people who have access to data and coming up with a mutually agreeable procedure to adjudicate people for eligibility for access to our data. And that was with the assumption that those individuals could potentially have access in an unregulated, unrestricted, completely open fashion to all our data. That was probably an overly conservative assumption about the level of access they'd have to our data, because Microsoft, like other cloud providers, has a much more selective fashion in which they allow their employees to have access to user or customer data. And so in our case, there aren't users who have access to all our data. They're users who are selectively granted access to a small part of our data for a very limited amount of time. So that's a much more fine-grained security model than we're used to in our environment. And so it requires us to adjust our thinking about what represents a security risk and to what level of trust do we have to exhibit or grant these people to have access to our data. And we're still grappling through that in terms of the extent to which, you know, someone who has access to a small fraction of our data on a conditional basis for a finite period of time has to be subject to the same personnel security considerations or concerns as someone that had open access to all our data.
Is personnel security, the way you're using it as security clearance process, is that really the next major obstacle or next major challenge around security? Because even if you say, yes, I agree with FedRAMP and FedRAMP does the high baseline and it meets all these controls, you still have the people issue. In your eyes, is that the next hurdle?
I would say it's an opportunity to resolve. I mean, you just look at the model that Google's adopted, where they're getting FedRAMP moderate by allowing their people to get exposed to an OPM background investigation. So that's a model to get us closer to an independent personnel security model that's not agency dependent. So some of that's just normalizing some of our expectations of what level of scrutiny do we have to give people to give them access to our data. And some of it has to do with just our thinking about, you know, what represents a risk when they're able to so finely control access to our data that we might be able to get more comfortable with people, potentially even non-U.S. citizens, to have access to a small fraction of our data for a limited amount of time under certain conditions.
Now, Holgate says behind this limited access are very important audit logs and other technologies to track who touched the data, when they touched the data, and if they changed the data at all. He says actually a recent incident highlights the importance of the audit logs when it comes to cloud security and data assurance, but not just for CIOs, but also for the business and mission owners.
We actually had an issue where Microsoft reported to us where they'd inadvertently given an employee access to our data for an extended period of time, inadvertently. And so they had the logs to prove they gave them the access. Nothing was done during that period of time. Nothing compromised our data. So the controls are also just the ability to verify what happens during those periods.
You as a CIO may say, okay, I'm comfortable with this, but you as a CIO also have to get your business people, your general counsel, your administrator, your director, your secretary to also accept these risks. How do you do that from your perspective?
Well, in our case, again, we applied the standard DOJ adjudication process for background investigations. By definition, made them comfortable because we could say it's the standard process, that's the standard level of trust we're exhibiting. But the longer-term issue is how do we get them comfortable with a more flexible security model that doesn't require the same level of adjudication of everyone under every circumstance in which they might have access to our data.
So Holgate and other CIOs on the panel recognize the changing nature of people and technology, the cloud security future, and where organizations like theirs, I think, need to go, Tom.
All right, Jason, so is cloud computing now something that federal agencies have inculcated as a normal part of their day-to-day thinking, and it's no longer something shiny and new?
It feels like it has. We've been talking about it for the last, you know, 6-7 years. But I still think that it's not quite there yet. It's not like, you know, the laptop or the desktop where you just, oh, yeah, of course I'll have one. Not everything will be in the cloud. And I think because initially everyone thought, well, cost savings will save a lot of money. But now it's moved from cost savings, that idea, to more of about flexibility, agility, and increased capabilities. Let me just give you an example. The Labor Department, they moved their email to the cloud about a year or so ago, and the benefits aren't just in the cost savings. Dawn Leaf is the Labor CIO.
What we found is we basically, when you wrap all the cost up, not only of the service, not only of the integrator, but your own staff, the mailbox size or cost comes out to be pretty much equivalent. But you get a lot more. We basically increased our storage for our staff by 400 times. The challenging parts were standardizing, because we are a federated organization, and the IT staff had to basically go through a process of modifying the firewalls, moving to a more consolidated infrastructure just to get to the service. There's a fair amount you have to do to your infrastructure to even be able to access the cloud services.
She adds that Labor found actually 150 inconsistencies per bureau in their network and access infrastructure that had to be resolved before getting to the cloud. So I think that's how it becomes more complicated. I think others, Holgate, Paiva, say that they're seeing similar responses from their mission and business owners when they talk about cloud. But at the same time, the next obstacle I think they have to deal with, you know, beyond security, as we touched upon earlier, is acquisition and how that approach continues to limit the widespread adoption of cloud services. Paiva says he's trying to get out of the IT business all together by the end of the calendar year by outsourcing much of ITA's technology infrastructure. But he's struggling with the procurement model where agency buys services based on how much they use, buy by the drink. And I think that's so new to many contracting officers, he's finding that that's just another kind of obstacle that he has to get through. So while, Tom, I think cloud definitely is well on its way, it's very much going to be, and it is, an accepted approach to IT, I think it's still going to take some time for agencies really to give up their old way of controlling and running those servers and networks.
All those server huggers. Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. Thanks for that report.
Always a pleasure, Tom.